This is the Tom Hartman Program.
And welcome back. Just a quick geeky science here. Why do we age? Despite more than a century of research, there's this vast industry trying to figure this out. This is from Science Daily. And it turns out they've been doing these studies on animals, very small animals, and they found that when they expose them to cooler temperatures, when they essentially lower the temperature to which they're exposed, there is an increase in lifespan. They originally thought that this was because it was causing the metabolic functions to slow down, so there was less oxidative stress. Reactive oxidative stress, in other words, less oxygen damaging cells, because that's generated by metabolic processes. But then they found out that it actually wasn't that. It seemed to affect the way that genes were being expressed. We don't know yet if this applies to humans, but you know, it's fascinating stuff. The impoverishment of America is something that I think is really quite extraordinary. And I wanted to share the story with you, and then we'll get back to your phone calls and our ongoing discussion about how we should deal with the president who's using worldwide wrestling as his model, basically, his governing model, his electoral model. He's using it against all of his opponents. He's, you know, but we'll get to that in just a second. In the Axios newsletter today, there was a fascinating story titled, "Dollar Stores Thrive in Distressed Pockets of America." And it says, as rural America gets left behind by the rise of coastal superstar cities, that one entity is heavily profiting from that blight. Now, just think about this for a minute. As Reaganomics is like settling in deeper and deeper and deeper and more a consequential part of the landscape of America, as Reaganomics continues to devastate, absolutely devastate, the middle class, we have more and more people sliding out of the middle class and into the poor class, you know, into the lowest economic categories. And that's actually producing a boom. Now, it's killing off the stores that have traditionally catered to the middle class. It killed off Sears, it killed off Kmart, it's killing off Macy's, because the middle class isn't large enough any longer to support these kind of stores. But there is one unique type of store, and I'm not talking about liquor stores or McDonald's here. There is one type of store that is actually experiencing an explosion in growth. I mean, a major explosion in growth across the United States. And the result, and this is, and in fact, there are over 30,000 of these stores today in the United States, whereas just 10 years ago, there were only 18,000. And 40 years ago, 30 years ago, these stores were not even, you know, nobody even heard of them, and they're called dollar stores. And increasingly, this is where many Americans in the bottom 50% of America, which is basically the poor, you know, the bottom 50% of America is, well, the bottom 80% of America is living paycheck to paycheck and can't withstand a $1,000 shock. The bottom 50% of America can't withstand a $400 shock, and not only is living paycheck to paycheck, but is badly in debt. And these dollar stores are now becoming the place where people are shopping not just for things. You know, you don't just go there for light bulbs. People are going there for food. And the food that they're finding is 100% processed food. It's the stuff that'll last on a shelf for 2 or 3 years. And one of the things, one of our earlier geeky sciences that we did a while ago, in fact, right here's the story itself. Eating junk food raises the risk of depression, says multi-country study. And then, you know, processed foods linked to breast cancer. That's from BBC, an article by Alex Therrien. Dennis Campbell writing over at The Guardian, eating junk food raises the risk of depression. This is the only stuff that's available in the dollar stores. You know, it's the Cheese Whiz with crackers. It's the you know, cheap peanut butter, it's if you're lucky. It's lots and lots of candies and you know, it's just. And the consequence of this is that we're seeing an explosion of obesity and diabetes and cancer in these poor neighborhoods. There are more dollar stores now in the United States than Walgreens, which, by the way, has been supporting financially the Republican Party in Wisconsin in their power grab. If you have a local Walgreens, you might want to call them up and let them know what you think about that. Walgreens, CVS, Home Depot, Costco, Kroger, and Walmart combined. And Walmart combined. All of those stores combined. There are they are still fewer than the number of dollar stores in America. And the big dollar chains, they're adding over 1,000 stores a year. And there's already 30,000 of them. I mean, how many places where poverty is deep in America? And as we slide, and the stock prices are exploding. This has been one of the real stars in the stock market over the last 15, 20 years. And a Dollar Tree in Alexandria, Virginia saw that the shelves were stocked with cheese nips and fudge stripes, and sodas were the only items in the refrigerator. This is, you know, these are the stores where everything's a buck, and in some cases they have prices that are a little higher than that. But this is what Reaganomics has brought us. And we're still living in Reaganomics. Bill Clinton campaigned against it with his New Covenant speech and said he was going to reverse Reaganomics, but he didn't do that. You know, after he was elected, there were a couple of the real big shots. One of the big bankers, and the head of the Fed sat him down. Greenspan sat him down and said, "Son, we know you campaigned on this New Covenant speech, and you know you're going to do a New Deal, but you're not. You got to dance to the tune of the bankers here." And then I'm guessing something very similar happened to Barack Obama. Of course, he inherited a financial crisis and chose to go along with the Bush administration's way of, you know, getting out of it by bailing out the people at the top rather than the people at the bottom. And so we're still in Reaganomics. And we're still watching the rich get richer while the poor get poorer. And in fact, here's again from this Axios piece. This is in the 1960s, the bottom 90% of Americans held 33% of the wealth, and the top 1% of Americans held 33% of the wealth. So the bottom 90% and the top 1% both held 1% of the wealth, or 33% of the wealth. The remaining third was held by the top 8%, 9%. But today, the bottom 90%, instead of having a third of America's wealth, 33%, only holds 20% of America's wealth. And the top 1%, instead of holding a third of our wealth, now has 40% of our wealth. And as the wealthy get wealthier, the middle class erodes. And that's what we're seeing. And then we've got Republicans basically promoting this, right? And when somebody comes in and wants to do something about it, like in Wisconsin, Michigan, Pennsylvania, North Carolina, the Republicans simply change the rules of the game. And they got this power in the first place by changing the rules of the election game by saying that there was this thing called voter fraud, which is non-existent. I mean, 20, 30 times a year, nationwide, out of billions of votes cast, will you find somebody who is a felon and didn't realize that they couldn't vote, or has voted in a district that they shouldn't have voted in, or whatever, you know, has, quote, illegally voted. And maybe once a year you get somebody who's not a citizen voting, and typically it's some European who's been living here for years and years who votes Republican. But what the Republicans have done just in 2018, this is from Occupy Democrats, in Florida they blocked campus voting. In Georgia, they purged hundreds of thousands of voters, in fact, 340,000 voters from the rolls who did not move out of state. They're still there. In Kansas, they closed the voting precincts in the Hispanic areas. In Michigan, they stripped the power from the new governor. In North Carolina, they collected Democratic ballots and didn't turn them in. In North Dakota, they restricted Native Americans from voting. In Texas, they closed polling sites in historically black college campuses. In Wisconsin, they stripped power from the new governor. I mean, this is what they're doing. And meanwhile, the way that, you know, what they're telling us to pay attention to, instead of the impoverishment of America, which is very real and is happening right in front of our eyes, what they're telling us to do is, hey, look at the wrestling match. Donald Trump is the wrestler. He's taking these guys on. And Trump has been driving this thing ever since he first got into the race. Keep in mind, he got into the race in the spring of 2015 in order to try to get NBC to raise his pay so that he was making more than Gwen Stefani. It was a publicity stunt with paid people in the audience, as were his first two rallies. But then it took off. Turns out America loves wrestling. We'll be right back.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Pick up your phone calls after the break. It's 16 minutes past. And welcome back. Let's see here. Steve in Gilderland, New York. Hey, Steve, what's up?
Hi, Tom. I just wanted to push back slightly on what you were saying, that dollar stores didn't exist 30 or 40 years ago.
I remember when the first one came to Okemos, Michigan. I was working in the mall at the time. It was 1971. So, yeah, they've been around for a while. That was almost 50 years ago, I think.
But we also had, I think more commonly, they were five and dime stores.
Oh, yeah, Woolworths. But see, the dollar store phenomena was everything in the store is a dollar. And I haven't been in a dollar store in probably 20 years. But back when they first started, there was everything is a dollar. In the five and dime stores, they had things that were expensive as well as things that were 5 cents or 10 cents.
I wasn't old enough to actually shop in them, but I do remember going to them.
Yeah,
parents.
Yeah, I did when I was a little kid too.
And I thought Walmart also started as kind of a discount, like similar idea.
Walmart was lowest price guaranteed. But when Sam Walton was alive, I remember we were living in Georgia at the time that the first Walmart came to Atlanta. And we went out and visited it. And there was this big banner across the top of the store. This must have been in the late 70s, early 80s. Big banner across the top of the store that said 100% made in America.
I remember that as well. Yeah, I remember that as well.
So. Yeah. Boy, how times change. But yeah, I think the five and dime stores is probably analogous to that. And it would be interesting to go back in history and see if the five and dime stores actually started during the Great Depression. I don't know the history of them. But if they were grandparents' version of the dollar stores.
I think they probably were. And I grew up in, not with a lot of wealth at all, and that's commonly where we would shop is, mm-hmm. is those kinds of places. So,
We used to go to the Woolworths in Lansing, and there was one in Newego. I think it was Woolworths. And it literally had five and dime, 5/10, on the front of the store on the logo.
On the sign, and I remember that we had a Woolworths on Main Street in Oneonta, New York, small town, college town, and right in the center of town. That was actually one of the main stores. But I remember very clearly, like almost everything was either a nickel or 10 cents. So.
Well, you must be older than me, because I remember going to the five and dime stores in Lansing in the 50s, and there, that's where my parents would go. I mean, if I needed a new coat or a jacket or something. If Dad was doing well, we would go there. If he wasn't, we'd go to the Salvation Army. A lot of my clothes the first 5-6 years of my life came from Salvation Army and thrift stores. But then we moved up to the Five and Dime store. So,
I know I'm not older than you, but
maybe it's a regional thing.
It could be a regional thing.
Or different chains.
But we didn't have a lot of wealth in Oneonta.
Yeah.
Still don't, but a lot of upstate New York towns are very depressed.
Yeah,
they don't even have dollar stores.
It's amazing that it's amazing that as a people we tolerate this. The people of Scandinavia said we're not going to have poverty here. We're just going to end poverty. We're going to do away with it, by and large. And why can't we? We're the richest country in the world. Why can't we figure that out? Steve, thanks a lot for the call. Yeah, it is. Yeah, good talking with you. Flashback to my childhood. We'll be right back with more of your calls after this. Stick around. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. And Tom in Chicago. Hey, Tom, what's up?
Hi. Thanks, Tom. I appreciate taking the call. Great show as always. And going back to the professional wrestling analogy and Trump, it's not just words. It's also visual. And what I was thinking of is there's a physicality to it, because I remembered in one of the debates, I don't know which one, with Hillary Clinton, how Trump stood behind her and just sort of stalked her, and he walked around the stage in a really menacing, threatening,
Yeah, it was a classic wrestling heel move.
Right. It's like choreographed. It was classic. So I just wanted to.
I think he was doing the same thing today in the White House with Schumer and Pelosi. He was sitting in the seat of power. They were sitting on the couches on the low power places, and he was, you know, proclaiming over on Mark Sumner over on Daily Kos called it a wrestling match. I mean, that's what it was.
Right. I think Schumer and Pelosi probably made a mistake in allowing the television cameras in. They just should have had a private meeting.
Maybe, because from what I've read, I have yet to watch it, and that's going to be the tell. But, from what I'm reading, it looks like Schumer was ready to slap down Trump and that he might have gotten the better of him. So maybe Schumer and Pelosi have figured out that if you want to engage in big time wrestling, you've got to realize that that's what you're doing.
Yeah, let's hope.
Yeah, there you go. There you go. Tom, thanks for the call.
Much.
Yeah, good talking with you. Sam in Asheville, North Carolina. Hey, Sam, thanks for listening to 101.1 FM. What's up?
Back to this pro wrestling analogy.
Yeah.
The American people do not like bad guys.
Yes and no.
This is going to bite Trump on the rear end. It's going to destroy him.
It may be. And in wrestling, the way it works is the heel, the bad guy, wins two or three or four matches in a row, and he always wins by cheating, right? He always wins by cheating. The referee is not looking, he punches the guy, and closed fist punches are illegal in wrestling, but he constantly does that. Then the good guy comes out and says, look at this bump on my head, and the ref goes, well, I didn't see it happen, I'm sorry, I don't know how you got that. And then finally there's the ultimate showdown, the big rematch. And in the ultimate showdown, the big rematch, that's when the heel, the bad guy, loses, and the good guy is triumphant. And that might be the Mueller thing. And the question is, if Trump, when Trump has his final, is the word denouement, whatever it is, the final, his final reckoning, and he goes down, is he going to survive it, right? Is he going to live to fight another day?
People are going to cheer when he goes down. Who is it who gets booed when he's walking into the arena? The heel.
Right. But that's what he wants.
The good guy.
That's what he wants.
Well, they sell tickets that way.
That's exactly right. And America is booing Donald Trump, and he's loving every minute of it.
But it's going to bite him on the rear end sooner or later.
From your lips to God's ears, Sam. We will see. We will see. I think you're right. I really do. But this whole thing is like, it's like scripted. It's amazing. Sam, thanks for the call. Leslie in Oak Park, Illinois. Hey, Leslie, what's up?
Oh, thank you very much for giving us all the opportunity to speak. I hate to go back to several conversations back, but I thought it was important. You were talking about there was a guest speaker,
mm-hmm.
And they were talking about the founders getting a president out of office.
Oh, David Priest, the author who was on at the beginning of the last hour. Yeah.
Right, and you mentioned short term as one of them, but we forgot about the Electoral College. And the Electoral College, if you read the Federalist Papers, number 68, was really about them, the delegates, vetting the candidates for fitness of skills and ethical standards. Eminent degree endowed with requisite qualifications, ability, and virtue.
Yes.
We don't talk about very much.
When they put together the Electoral College, Jefferson had been studying Paul de Rupin de Terrasse, who was the what was called the Whig historian. He was writing the history of England before the invasion long before the Norman invasion. This is even before the Roman invasion. And England was mostly red-haired and mostly tribal, which Jefferson just loved. And every year they had what was called the Wicca Gemeinschaft, where each community would send somebody, a wise elder that they selected, to this annual big national retreat, essentially, where they would make decisions for all of England, and then they would go back to their communities and say what happened. And that's what, in his mind, the Electoral College was patterned after. It was supposed to be essentially a council of wise elders who were counseled in turn by the voters, but they didn't have to vote the way the voters told them to. Back to you, Leslie.
Yes, exactly. And it also talks about delegates capable of analyzing the quality adapted for the station, and those people that were.
So you're saying that the Electoral College should have refused to vote their votes for Trump. Is that what you're saying?
They were supposed to vet him, and in that vetting, they were supposed to analyze.
What happened?
There's music playing.
Oh, yeah.
And they're supposed to analyze his fitness for the office.
Yeah, I get it, and I agree with you. And I think maybe one elector bailed on Trump. I might be wrong. It has happened in the past, but it should have been more. You're right, Leslie. Thank you for the call.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 202-808-9925.
Wrestling, climate change, dollar stores, all kinds of stuff coming up right after the break. Stick around. Welcome back. 34 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. Dave in Federal Way, Washington. Hey, Dave, what's up?
Hey, not too much, Tom. I just wanted to comment on this Trump and professional wrestling comparison. Mm-hmm. Now, I've been thinking about it for a while, you know. What Trump has really done is in, you know, our political theater, which has always been around, he's really... you know, capitalized on the fiction, the narrative of professional wrestling. And I fear that he might make it standard, you know, in our political theater. And what worries me about that is it's really an extension of the good versus evil narrative that George Bush standardized. I mean, it's so simple, you know. In wrestling, everybody knows who the protagonist and the antagonist are.
Right.
You know, now it varies. Some people, you know, it does vary, but it's a very clear split. It's very obvious. But the problem is, you know, the world is not that clear.
That's right.
Decisions are not that apparent. And really, that's my only kind of grievance with President Obama is I've always questioned, all right, President Obama brought nonfiction into the fictional world that George Bush created. And I've always wondered about the consequences of that. And, you know, I saw some Trump voters.
For example, what do you mean, Dave?
A TV. Yeah, let me tell you. Well, not too long ago when this thing with North Korea took off, I saw a bunch of Trump voters around a TV screen like they were watching a sports contest.
Right.
And it was Donald Trump calling Kim Jong-un Little Rocket Man. And, man, they were celebrating that. They were like, oh, we finally have a president who's strong. No more weak Obama, mealy-mouth Obama. You know, this is clear. This is right to the point. And I said, I told him, and I put myself in peril because they almost attacked me. I said, how do you think that translates to Hangul? They were like, what's Hangul? I said, well, that's the language 90% of Koreans speak, you know. They don't, I mean, Little Rocket Man, we don't know how that translates. And they automatically called me a Clinton lover and a Clinton supporter, and this is what I thought.
Yeah, I wonder, Dave, if when Trump went over and met with Kim Jong-un, he said, you know, my calling you Little Rocket Man and making fun of you and saying I got a bigger button than you do and stuff. He said, let me tell you how big-time wrestling works. You know, I was just basically setting you up as my foil, and this is all theater, and don't worry about it. We can make this stuff work. You think he might have had that kind of conversation?
Oh, it's possible. And let me tell you, this wrestling thing can work on individuals. Like, there's even some stuff about Kim Jong-un was told that Donald Trump was really psycho and out of control by Trump allies.
Right.
I mean, I guess they it can work on individuals. But on nation states with a system that can take all this stuff apart and analyze it. Let me put it this way: remember Helsinki with Putin and Trump?
Yeah, I do.
Remember what Trump said? Trump said, "Look, they wanted me to go over them, punch the guy or something." No, nobody wanted Donald Trump to go over and punch Vladimir Putin on the world stage. That's crazy. That's the way Trump. That is Trump's own fiction.
Yeah. So this is reflecting the way not just a style, not just a form of entertainment, a form of storytelling, but it's also reflecting probably the very simplistic worldview that Donald Trump has, and this idea that there's good and evil, and that all good is pure good and all evil is pure evil, whether it's a person or a country, is, as you point out, Dave, one of our most dangerous fictions and a dangerous outcome of this kind of behavior. Dave, thanks. Very well said. Chip in Tampa, Florida, listening on WMNF. Hey, Chip, what's up?
Hey, Tom. There's all kinds of ways to categorize people. I want to talk about one way that should get much more attention and people should be way more outraged by, and that is that when it comes to wealth, there are two types of people. There are people that live off their earned income, and then there are those who primarily live off unearned income, that being the money they make off their money.
Right.
And
those people are called capitalists. There's all these Americans running around going, I'm a capitalist. No, you're only a capitalist if you live off capital. Back
right.
to you.
And so what we're talking about in the former is 90 to 90% of the people, and the latter, those who live off unearned income, is 1% or less.
Yeah, exactly.
And for example, if you have a net worth of $4 million and you get a measly 1% return on that, that's $40,000, which is more money than half the country makes at their job.
Right.
And here's where the outrage should really come in is the people making the unearned income pay, for the most part, lower tax rates than those who are actually getting up and going to work.
That's correct.
And that unearned income, to make it worse, comes from the effort of working people.
Yep.
And so the people
working people are building the cars at GM, but it's the people who own the stock who are making the profits.
Exactly. And because the people who are in charge of the economy and the government and the political system are pretty much the unearned income people, they are making the rules that benefit them and at the expense of
everybody. And because of the Supreme Court, they're buying the politicians who set up those rules. Excellent points all, Chip. Thanks a lot for the call. That's, it's a very, very good point. Eric in Milwaukee. Hey, Eric, what's up?
I just wanted to call and put a little nugget about the dollar store thing. In North Carolina, there's an individual named Art Pope.
Oh, yeah.
He doesn't own
He's like the richest guy in the state.
He owns many discount retail stores.
He runs dollar stores?
It's called Roses is a big chain. He's got hundreds of stores, and they're all discount stores and kind of like a local Kmart-type variety. And he's got a few dollar stores as well. And he gives, obviously millions to the Republicans and conservatives. He was one of the leading proponents behind the Bastion bill in North Carolina. So he's kind of a local Koch brother.
Yeah, like just like the DeVos family in Michigan, the Amway family, Betsy DeVos and Eric Prince, they basically own the Republican political party in Michigan. Art Pope owns the Republican party in North Carolina.
To keep his customers below the poverty line.
Wow. Yeah. Amen. Eric, thanks for the call and thanks for listening to 1510 AM. Good talking with you. Art in Tallahassee, Florida. Hey, Art.
Hey, Tom. How you doing?
Good. What's on your mind?
Just wanted to comment on the what just happened in the White House with Chuck Schumer and Nancy Pelosi and Donald Trump. And I think one way, you've been talking about this wrestling analogy, I think of it as like a theater scenario.
Mm-hmm.
And these are actors.
Yeah, wrestling is theater.
True. Very true. And one way to sort of break the show is for them to sort of break the third wall and actually turn and talk to the audience. And if they had simply adjusted how they were sitting on the couch and turned towards the cameras, they would have put Trump behind them and they would have been able to, speak directly to the camera when they're making their comments and, periodically turn back and glance at Trump while he's making his statement.
That's interesting.
But they totally would have stolen the show and taken the power just a total shakeup of the show that Trump is putting on.
I think it's called breaking the fourth wall, Art. That's where, almost never see this on television. The actor never looks into the camera because that's breaking that wall. Revealing to the viewer that they're not just, anonymous voyeurs watching this reality that's happening, that actually it's more interactive. And
exactly.
that would have been a powerful one. Well, hopefully somebody from Schumer's office or Pelosi's office are listening, Art. Great advice. Art, thank you very much for the call. Yeah, good talking with you. Rich in Central Woolley, Washington. Hey, Rich, what's up?
Hey, Tom. Well, my bumper sticker, first of all, is Reaganomics killed the middle class. But I called to talk about the wrestling analogy. I've got a colleague, a friend of mine. He's gone way down the QAnon rabbit hole. He likes to send the updates. I pointed out to him the other day how Q is like a wrestling match. They've got a bare-bones plot that they flesh out as they go along so they can keep it fresh. But now, in light of what you told me, Q looks like the B-League to Trump's A-League. It's what makes Trump's A-League wrestling league look real and acceptable. But also the Q League is where they're trying out the new plot,
the
envelope.
So the Q is was your friend asserting the Q was an individual or the Q was a movement?
kind of both. Q, the legend is that Q is somebody from the deep state or formerly an agent of the NSA or something with a Q-level security clearance. That's why it's called Q.
Right.
And I don't know if it's a... And he is the leader of the movement. He's the source of the information, and then it's disseminated through various...
And agents. He's the source, and he's the pro-Trump mole buried in the deep state, according to this fantasy.
Yeah, that's the way I understand it.
Yeah.
Their whole plot line just evolves, and like, for example, the Pizzagate thing kind of washed out, so it now it's kind of reemerged as a worldwide child sex and stuff.
Yeah, somehow they always end up back in that place.
Pardon?
Somehow they always end up back in that place of pedophilia and stuff like that, or you know,
yeah,
animal sacrifice.
Yeah.
I mean, they just go for the most weird stuff.
Well, their whole thing is that boils down to the globalists versus the nationalists.
Yeah.
Of course, Donald Trump is the nationalist, and, you know, Hillary and the one-worlders and the global market, and they're the people who promote things like TPP and WTF,
right.
NAFTA, and...
yeah, so you've got the good guys and the bad guys. It's
exactly, and it, you know, they're pushing the envelope there. It's like the extreme for the lazy-minded people who love conspiracies. It's where they really push, but the whole
I get it. But what's so sad is that so many people have gotten sucked into this. Rich, thanks for the call. Josh in Springfield, Tennessee. It says here you want to disagree with me, Josh. You go to the front of the line. What's up?
Yes, sir. You're talking about wealth inequality and all that.
Yes, sir.
You know, you're blaming it all on the Republicans.
I am.
And, you know, Donald Trump and everybody else. But it's not all the Republicans. You know, the Democrats are just as corrupt as the Republicans
are. No, they're not. Not even close.
Okay, they've been in power for 8 years. Obama talked about change and this and that, but nothing ever changed.
And that's because the Republicans blocked him. Obama had a filibuster-proof Senate for 74 business days out of his entire 8 years. And during those 74 days, he got a hell of a lot done, including a major reform of the health care system that was first attempted by Harry Truman back in the 40s. He got a lot done, and then the Republicans started blocking him because I defy you, Josh. In fact, I will reward you. I'll send you an autographed copy of any of my books you choose. If you can name for me that's fine. I'll acknowledge you on the air. If you can name for me one piece of legislation that in my lifetime, in the last 67 years, that was initiated by a Republican, that passed by with Republican majorities in the House and Senate, and that was signed into law by a Republican president, that's principal beneficiary, that principally benefited the working people of this country. One piece of legislation in the last 70 years. Name one, you win the prize.
Okay, I'm
not listening.
Saying Republicans aren't trash.
I'm listening.
Okay, and
I can give you a long list for the Democrats, right? Long-term health, unemployment insurance, Medicare, Medicaid, workplace safety rules, environmental rules. Name one that a Republican has come up with.
Well, I agree with all those. I applaud.
Well, then you're a Democrat, Josh.
That. There's nothing any different from. I mean,
there absolutely is. The Democrats are fighting for the average person, and the Republicans are fighting for the billionaires. That's why they gave the billionaires a $5 trillion tax cut last year, which is going to gut our economy more, even worse.
You want to have equal income and raise pay raises and all this other stuff, but then you want to flood the country with immigrants.
I don't want to flood the country with immigrants. I don't know anybody that wants to flood the country with immigrants, Josh.
Yeah, they do, man.
Well,
historically, by the billionaires in this country,
Josh. It was Ronald Reagan. Stop for a second and just listen to this, because I'm going to hit a break here in about 33 seconds. It was Ronald Reagan who stopped enforcing the law in 1986 that said that if wealthy white employers hire people who are here without documentation, they go to jail. Ronald Reagan stopped putting employers in jail. And then employers started, and he did that specifically to break the unions in the meatpacking industry and the construction industry. And no president since then, Democrat or Republican, has started enforcing those laws again, even though they're still on the books. You're concerned about immigration? Talk to your hero, Ronald Reagan.
Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
We'll be right back with more of the program after this. And welcome back, Brandon in Jacksonville, Illinois. Hey, Brandon, thanks for watching us on YouTube. What's up?
Hey, Tom, thanks for having me on. I was just wanting to continue the wrestling analogy.
Hmm? Go for it. Hello? Brandon,
I used to watch...
Oh, there you are. Okay, go ahead.
I used to watch wrestling back in the Nikolai Volkoff and the Iron Sheik, Hulk Hogan era, until I found out that I grew up, it was a male soap opera, so to speak.
Yeah.
And then I started tweeting about it when Trump, the wrestling analogy about the heel face when Trump was in the Republican primary, and especially when Linda McMahon became on his cabinet, I tweeted a lot about it. But I just wanted to tell you that you might want to rethink the heel face analogy, because he could always become a face and right. win the match if
yes.
you legalize the minimum wage or raise Social Security or one of those things to get the population behind him and get reelected.
And it's entirely possible he'll do this. This is a guy who has no core principles, no core beliefs. You know, he's got a couple of good punchlines. But, you know, when he tries to execute them, you know, like let's bring tariffs back and have a protectionist trade policy, something I agree with. But when he tries to execute it, he does it by executive order. So, you know, no company is going to build a factory based on the fact that there's going to be tariffs for the next 2 years. You have to get it through Congress. But he doesn't know how to do that. He doesn't, you know, he has no interest in doing that. He just wants to be the wrestling guy. But I agree with you, Brandon. If he were to legalize pot nationwide, if he were to, you know, raise the cap on Social Security. I mean, if he were to do the things he said he was going to do, you know, he said that when the tax cuts, when the so-called tax reform was passed, that his taxes would go up. Now, he knew he was lying. I mean, the day that bill passed, he was down at Mar-a-Lago and he walked out into the dining room and he said, I just made you guys all a whole bunch richer. And, you know, got applause from the, you know, people who could afford a $200,000 annual fee to be at Mar-a-Lago. But or entrance fee or whatever it is, but I don't know that he could do it. I mean, you know, it's I suppose well, the pot thing that's fairly non-controversial these days. Increasingly,
let's remember, Tom. He used to be a face before he became the heel.
Well, he's played both roles. He's played both roles. I mean, in The Apprentice, he was basically playing the role of a face. He was the good guy.
So, I just think it's interesting, and I think he could possibly fool some of the Americans into thinking he's the good guy. And
well, I think he already has. You know, the 20% who agree with Trump are, you know, are they think he's the face. They think he's the good guy. It's not like they're yes. rooting for the bad guy. I mean, nobody wants to root for the bad guy.
No, but if he does some good things for the country, then the country might elect the bad guy again.
Yeah. What I wonder is, I mean, you know, he tweets, oh, Mueller just said there's no collusion. He tweets, we have the best job numbers ever. We had the biggest tax cut ever. All these are lies. And they're lies that he's putting out to try and make himself look like a face rather than a heel. And it works for his base. I mean, it works for the people who watch Fox News and listen to right-wing radio, because there is no voice pushing back. There is nobody saying, oh, wait a minute, that's not true. But it's not working, you know, with the rest of the country. And so we're just going to have to see how this plays out. But Brandon, I think you're onto something. Thanks a lot for the call, and thanks for listening to us down there in Jacksonville. We'll be back. It's 52 minutes past the hour. It's the Tom Hartman radio program, or radio and TV, I suppose, helping you win the water cooler wars, the place where despair is not an option. We'll be right back. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. And Luisius in Thompson, Georgia. Am I saying your name right?
Yes, sir.
So it says here you disagree with me. What's up?
Not necessarily disagree. I disagree with Democratic and Republican. And I wanted to know why. Why would African Americans or black people, why would they vote for either party?
Because
in the past.
because the Democratic Party has not been hostile to black people and you know, was the champion of civil rights in the 60s and continues to be, whereas the Republican Party has, you know, consistently fought civil rights. And I mean, George Herbert Walker Bush, for example, the last Republican president to croak, you know, back in the 60s, he called the Civil Rights Act a terrible thing. He was totally opposed to it. I don't even get the argument there. I that's so obvious. Brent in Hilliard, Ohio. Hey, Brent, what's up?
Hey, Tom. So when I was young, the professional wrestling, it was very clear who was heel and who was face. But somewhere in the mid-90s, that kind of changed, and the characters became more complicated.
Hmm.
And oftentimes, at least in the, you know, in that main, the big one that's on the TV all the time, and the characters became more complicated, and you started to see that there were nearly equal factions in a sort of big event cheering for both parties, depending on their leanings. It's a silly thing. But I think that's what we're dealing with a little bit here. It definitely is theater and it's theatrical, but the Republicans, you know, coming back, starting way back with the Ayn Rand, you know, libertarianism and all of that stuff that kind of took hold, they've polluted people's brains so badly that they simply don't know who the heel is.
Right.
And that's a scary future.
Yeah, it is. It is. And
because the heel is obvious to us.
Yeah. Yeah, excellent point, Brent. Excellent point. Thanks for that. I like I said, I haven't watched wrestling in 30, 40 years. I'm going to have to check it out. Bud in Baltimore, Maryland. Hey, Bud.
Yeah, Tom. I love the wrestling.
We're hitting the end of the show here right now. I'm sorry. Can you call back tomorrow and we'll continue the conversation? I'm really sorry. It's literally the end of the show. Thanks so much for being with us today. We'll be back tomorrow. Don't forget, democracy is not a spectator sport. It requires you. So get out there and get active. Tag, you're it. Thanks so much for being with us. We'll see you tomorrow.
You've been listening to Tom Hartman. For audio and video archives, visit TomHartman.com.